In this episode of The Critical Myth, The Critical Myth crew completes the preview of the new fall season and then wraps up the week with quick hits. It's episode 483, Anticipation and Resolution.
And we're back with episode 483 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I don't know if I'm comfortable with John becoming Peyton Manning and calling audibles.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and we're only talking about these new shows. We don't get to watch them yet. Sigh. Okay.
Yeah, I know. It is unfortunate. But yeah, we are still going along with our preview of the fall season, at least in general terms here, just a very quick rundown of the things that we are interested in seeing and a lot of the things that we're going to talk about here on the show. But then we're going to get into this week's quick hits as we continue to wrap up a lot of the shows from the summer that just weren't grabbing our attention enough to kind of keep up with in a timely fashion. But that being the case, let's go ahead then. Oh, before we do all of that, Edmund, I guess there's something you need to do.
Well, whenever we start talking about stuff that's already aired, we'll probably spoil you. So we need to warn you about that. But with most of these shows we'll be talking about in quick hits, I don't think you're really going to be spoiled too much.
No, probably not. We're as I said before, a little behind anyway. All right, well, we left off going into Wednesday nights in the fall. And let's see, I'm going down this list, and it's taking me a little while to find... Oh, there it is, on the CW. Yes. Arrow at 8 o'clock, followed up by The 100 Season 2. Okay. Again, that was The 100 was one of those shockingly good mid-season shows last year.
Yes.
And definitely looking forward to that coming back.
Yeah.
On the regular networks, anything that I'm missing here, guys?
Not really. So, although my brain's obviously going in strange places tonight because I was seeing on CBS there is this show Stalker, which I have no interest in as it's currently constituted. But I did suddenly think that if it was an adaptation of the Tarkovsky science fiction film from the Soviet era on like the Sundance Channel, I might be interested in it. But Dermot Mulroney tracking down stalkers? No, not really.
That was an impressive obscure reference, by the way. Very nicely done. It has Dylan McDermott, Elizabeth Rahm, who was Kate on Angel. We've got Maggie Q, who, of course, was Nikita. So there's some people on the cast, but the premise leaves me just completely blah.
Yeah, exactly.
Gary, how about you? Anything on the major networks here?
No, but you would have typically have mentioned Ghost Hunters, so I feel the need to step in for you. So.
No.
I'll mention that. So.
No. No.
On the other hand, my guilty pleasure, Modern Family, is starting up again. So.
Yeah, we also watched that, but one of the big reasons that I wasn't really talking about that or bringing it up is that it's become definitely something that piles up on our DVR more often than not, because it's kind of lost the freshness of it. It seems to be kind of falling back on things a bit. On the familiar, so we'll see if they kind of regain some freshness here. But going down in terms of the cable offerings, I'm going through. I see American Horror Story, and boy, is there a lot of promotion for this next run with the Freak Show. Did Edmund disappear?
No, I'm here. It's just I've been finding that I'm not sure if the setting of this season is one that I'm going to be as into as I was last season. So.
Well, this is now three seasons of them starting off really strong.
Yeah.
And kind of losing track of things towards the end.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I don't know how much my interest in this is really peaked as it is. I might give it a shot, but I have no real expectation that this series is going to be, or this season is going to be any more consistent or well thought out than the previous three.
Yeah,
it starts off strong, but then it seems like the writers go more for shock value than they do for good storytelling.
Yeah, exactly. Although this is Jessica Lange has said this will be her last season, so I'm with you. I will at least be checking it out at the beginning, and then I'll see if I want to continue.
Yes, and of course on TNT, going into the fall, we have the first season of Legends, which we talk about in our quick hits.
Yep.
Anything else here that I'm missing on the cable side, guys? Anything that you watch, Gary, that we're not talking about? Or your devotion to I Heart Nick Carter is his past at this point?
It's just not the same anymore.
No, it really isn't. yeah, there's not a whole lot here as I kind of go over it again. Girlfriend Intervention. What the heck? Yeah. Okay. I don't even want to know.
No.
Let's go on to Thursdays. That's a safer thing. Well, ABC is just the Shonda Rhimes channel at this point, so I'll just move on from there.
Well, I would like to point out that who's our reviewer? Nadim, I think it is.
Yes.
Had talked up Scandal very well last season, so that's coming back. And he was usually hitting it with eights or nines, so that's...
Yeah,
If you like that particular genre, as Nadim does, you know, great things last year. Hopefully they can keep up, keep it up for the year to come.
Good point. It is one of those big buzzworthy shows right now. I guess on CBS, we've got this weird thing where they now have several weeks of Thursday night football.
Yes.
And then they're going to begin their season way late in almost into November. But Elementary will be back.
Yep.
Which is good news for fans of that show. For me, I guess The Vampire Diaries coming back is good news. My wife loves Rain, and they promise they're going to get even more sexy, apparently, this coming season, which they were already pushing the boundaries a bit. Yeah, sure. Whatever. Come on now. The show stars, like many shows these days, a hot Australian. Mm-hmm. So,
Yep.
Bronson got a shot. Sorry.
No.
Not yet.
Allegiance had some interest, I guess. It's kind of like a network version of Homeland, from what I recall, kind of mixing that with The Americans to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm still not sold on it from what I've seen of it. I haven't seen a lot either. I've only seen a few scenes here and there. So
yeah, and I do just have to mention, I mean, we also have Grace Point starting on Fox, which is, of course, this odd animal of David Tennant coming over and doing an American accent in a American remake of the Broadchurch series that was a huge hit in England last year, and which I've already seen. So I really have it. My attitude with this is, no, I've seen it. I don't need to see the American remake of it.
This is one of those American remakes of a really good British production that I'm perfectly happy to allow it to exist. I just have no interest at all in seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a version that's made for Americans that aren't going to seek out the British version, almost as if like a gateway drug of in a certain sense.
Yeah.
But it's just weird that David Tennant is playing a kind of version of his character. I don't know. It's weird. It's very strange to me.
With an American accent too.
Yeah. That's what's throwing me off. It's like I'm in a certain sense kind of morbidly fascinated just to see what the performance looks like, but then I would be comparing it, so I almost feel like I don't want to.
Yeah,
it's weird.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of those things where and you've got Anna Gunn, coming off of Breaking Bad and her fabulous run there, playing the female lead, the detective opposite him. So I mean, it's one of these things where but for this pedigree, I'd probably be interested in it, but I really feel like I've seen it already, and this does not feel like a case like Being Human, where they've pretty much said they're doing, some people have said that in terms of those who've seen the pilot, into it's virtually shot by shot remake in parts of it. So this does not feel like a case where they're going to wind up taking it in different directions.
No, and that's probably why I feel like I don't need to see it, because, again, it feels like, here, American audiences, here's the same story just packaged for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. On cable, we have, and I'm guessing that at some point, it's just not on here, at some point on Thursdays, we're going to get the rest of the Covert Affairs season.
We better. So.
It just isn't shown here. That's what I was looking for before. But I believe they already said in their promotional stuff that the rest of the season was coming back in October, so...
I'm pretty sure they shot it already, so it's just... Yeah, it's just...
It's done. It's just, I think that they split it up now, and it's become...
This growing trend of split seasons is really annoying me.
Yeah, I think it's the new status quo, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Now, Haven is back, and we'll be talking about that next week. This one I'm really surprised by, because I was certain that I had read that it had gotten a 20-episode fifth season. I was wrong. It got a 26-episode fifth season.
Haven?
Yes.
How cheap is that to produce, that they're actually going to 26 on season 5? Wow.
And they're essentially breaking it into two 13 episode legs, I guess you could say. To me, this is their... Okay, here's my conspiracy theory. They knew that they wanted to have at least six seasons of the show, but they couldn't convince anyone to go past five seasons.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
They said, sure, we're only doing five seasons. We're giving them 26 episodes, which is two seasons worth.
Yeah, you can stay
in the fifth season contract.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. It's like even network seasons aren't 26 episodes anymore, let alone cable.
No, but I would be shocked to see it go anywhere past this.
Yeah.
This feels like a deal made to ensure that the show comes to a proper conclusion.
Yeah, definitely.
That said, hey, if that's the way that they, if that's what they have to do to make it end correctly, I'm all for it. Other than that, I don't really see a lot else here that strikes my fancy on Thursday nights on cable.
No.
Okay. Friday nights. I know, Gary, you're probably looking forward to this too. Grimm comes back.
Oh, great. That show has just been getting better and better every season. I'm really looking forward to what they do with it.
And they've paired Grimm with Constantine.
Yes.
Which is actually feels like a pretty good match.
Yeah, that's we haven't seen where they're going to go with Constantine, but yeah, on the drawing board, that seems like a good flow into the other, Grimm, while admittedly slightly dark, will lead into hoping is the darker Constantine. So no, that's a sort of nice primer to get you going. Yeah.
Yeah. Now they moved Amazing Race from Sunday nights to Friday nights on CBS. So that's interesting. That I almost guarantee that we'll make it a DVR type show, but at least it has less chance of being preempted and moved around by the football schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been enjoying the resurrection of Whose Line Is It Anyway? quite a bit. No matter how ribald the particular comedy style might be on that show, it's become the kind of show that my wife and I and our daughter can watch and just laugh hysterically at. So it's a good show for the DVR as well. Let's see other things on Friday nights as I'm going down the list here. Well, on Sci-Fi there's the show Z Nation, and I hate to tell you, but you know how I always say that I really don't enjoy zombie stuff very much, mm-hmm. The Walking Dead being a major exception?
Yep.
The Z Nation proved to me why that's the case.
Now, I know we went through some of these during some of our news discussions a few weeks ago, but there were we talked about two or three zombie things at the same time. Is this they're shooting the zombie film, or is this there actually was a whole zombie apocalypse, so to speak?
This is the one that was kind of The Walking Dead meets The Last of Us, okay. In that there is somebody who holds the cure, and they've got to get them across the country.
Yeah.
I didn't even get through the first episode.
Okay. Yeah. I forgot it was on. But then when I started seeing reviews saying that this was the TV series version of Sci-Fi's B movie Saturday movie franchise. This is Sharknado taken to series level. I decided I may not need to pick this one up.
I feel very bad for DJ Qualls and Harold Perrineau for being stuck in this dump. But for those who can't get enough zombie stuff, there you go. I guess you have that.
Is it tongue in cheek or?
It tries to be, and it fails miserably.
Ooh, ouch. And also I should mention I've been watching The Nick on Cinemax in that same time slot and enjoying it immensely. So
stick with that.
Yes.
you're better off. I would probably be watching that show too if it wasn't for the fact that I just can't get into the subject matter. But
okay,
there we are. Come on now, because everything is because of Ancient Aliens. That's on history too.
Oh, of course.
It's about time you've realized that, John.
I know.
And I also do want. I mean, although I realize, I think this is what they've done with most of their drama series. I commend Cinemax for once not putting a quality drama series on Sunday nights where it can conflict with everything else.
That is a good point. Yeah, there's not a whole lot, especially in August and going into September on Friday nights late.
Yes.
That it's going to overlap with. So it's probably as good a feature time slot as they can get right now.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday nights, there's not a whole lot, obviously. I believe AMC has Hell on Wheels for those who four seasons in are still watching that show.
I am still watching that show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, it bites at the historian in me. I've read several books on the whole topic of building the Intercontinental Railroad, and I think they hit true sometimes, and of course sometimes they go for, theatrical license, which is fine too. But it's enjoyable. It's a rough and tumble. It's kind of like cowboys without spurs, I guess you'd almost want to say. So you get a little taste of Western without being dipped in it. So it's enjoyable.
Okay.
Huh.
Yeah, and I just want to mention also, I believe, or I'd heard, except I don't see it mentioned here on the grid, but that they were going to pair it with repeats of Turn to try and get to gin up some more interest in Turn now that it had actually been renewed for season two.
Huh. I had not seen that, but that would be probably a good idea. All right, on BBC America Saturday nights, that's usually the channel to go to.
Yes.
Doctor Who, of course, is going through the entire all season. And then we have Intruders, which we'll be talking about shortly.
Yes.
Yeah. Enough You've said. Probably seen a lot of promos for that. And we're going to give you a little bit of a taste of our opinion of it. My wife has been enjoying the heck out of Outlander.
Yeah, I've been caught a few of the episodes. And, well, it's not... I wouldn't say it's my number one thing to watch. I've been recording it and watching it, off season. So,
yeah, I mean, I particularly like that era of history, and so it. While there are, of course, romance overtones to the whole thing, they're not nearly as blatant as one would expect, and I love it when they really delve into some of the nitty gritty of the history, and they're showing the. What life really would have been like back then, and they do a really good job. I mean, my wife, however, is probably so much of a fan of this particular novel series that she probably could recite the first few novels word for word, and she's even loving this adaptation. So if it's passing muster with her, then obviously it's doing its job. And it's Ron Moore. I mean, that's the surprising part of this whole thing, is that the guy behind Battlestar Galactica is doing a historical romance with genre overtones. It's kind of an odd fit, but it seems to be working.
Oh, really? I think you did the same thing in BSG.
I see where you did that. And, of course, that means that on the Lifetime Movie Network, we have Ghost Inside My Child Season 2. But doesn't everybody? What? Oh, okay. No, I don't even understand why that show exists, but anyway. Sunday. ABC is doing an interesting thing here. I guess Once Upon a Time will be split into two sections or legs or
whatever.
Yes. Of course it will, yeah.
Half seasons, and then in between will be the musical Gallivant.
Did you say musical, John?
I did.
Huh.
Didn't they learn from Cop Rock?
A musical comedy fairy tale of epic proportions. Think Enchanted... the series. Yeah. And they follow that up, at least for a little while, with the second season of Resurrection, which I've read a little bit about. They still promised to get darker. And after that season finale for the first season that corrected so many of the things that were going wrong with that show and really took it into a bit of darker territory anyway, I'm willing to give them a shot. The Good Wife comes back for season 6, and they'll see if they can continue the strong momentum coming out of that. I have absolutely no one who is anticipating CSI Cyber, which is probably the worst name I've ever heard for a CSI spinoff, which I thought they were done doing. The Walking Dead comes back, of course, October 12th, and we'll be we'll of course see some of that footage early at New York Comic Con. I'm looking down the list here. Of course, cable is always just rife with good stuff.
Oh yeah, John, you got your Witches of the East End coming back. I know you've been looking forward to that one.
No. Now, talk to the people over at PodCulture. They've actually been watching it, and I at least get a good chuckle out of them trying to find ways to say nice things about it as it continues to not meet anyone's expectations. I know some people are watching The Strain. Are either of you watching that right now? That goes through till early October.
I had an interesting thing of where I'd let a bunch of them pile up on the DVR, and I kind of binged watched through them over a couple of nights, and that actually seems to be a good way of doing it, because some of the episodes can be a little uneven, and I've been rather amused at some of the reactions of people where there seems to be something similar to some of the Walking Dead reactions, where some people get annoyed when they take a step back from the vampire aspects and deal more with the backgrounds of the characters and their family lives, etc. And it's like, you know, no, why aren't you going after nasty vampires and being gory? If you just string a few episodes together like that, you kind of wind up getting a good mix of both. But it's not a great series, but it's a fun horror series is the way I would put it.
Okay.
But certainly, I mean, in terms of, you know, the, you know, this is, I mean, this is Del Toro definitely going, no, vampires are supposed to be icky and gory and scary, and let's get away from sparkly romancy stuff.
That's at least something.
Yeah.
HBO, Gary, Boardwalk Empire, are you watching this final season?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm still enjoying it. They're putting enough little twists and turns into the story where I feel like it's reaching the end that they've planned all along. Everything seems to be falling in place, which is nice to sort of get that fulfilling sense about a series. But yeah, you can definitely feel it, you know, winding down, closing up, you know, focusing in towards a finale. So I'm finding it quite enjoyable. The only thing I'm missing is that, well, as they've been going to reach this finale, we're not getting the breadth of characters that we used to have on the show. There used to be a lot of, this used to be a very character rich show with several different characters, and we've lost a lot of those towards this season. So I'm a little disappointed in that.
Now Homeland is coming back in early October. As we've mentioned before, a 2-episode premiere, so we'll see very quickly whether or not the show can get its mojo back.
Yep.
And then, in the meantime, Masters of Sex is going to be wrapping up its second season this month.
Yep.
I'm not really all that, interested in the affair that starts up after that, but...
Kind of like we were talking about with Grace Point. Well, a wonderful cast, and yes, I feel like I've already seen most of the series because Showtime's been promoting the heck out of it.
I think they pretty much showed you everything that you need to see in the promos.
Yes.
And then, of course, Manhattan is going to be wrapping up soon, and I'm interested in seeing when the next original from WGN comes, because the two that they've had so far mm-hmm. have been surprisingly good.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like AMC quality at this point. In my mind, which is shocking considering this is a basic cable network.
Yeah. And also, poles apart in terms of the sort of style and execution of those two series as well. So it's like, okay guys, which direction are you going to go in this time?
I'm almost happy to just see what they do and if they can keep up the momentum, because whoever it is that is in charge of their creative programming, which is a completely new venture for them, I'm feeling a lot of trust with them right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're clearly shepherding this in a very strong fashion. So I'll be interested to see where that goes, but not a lot of word on what's going to be the follow-up coming out of Manhattan.
Yeah.
Again, I'm going to say I don't know if WGN got acquired by the same conglomerate that does AMC and such, but there is a similarity in my mind in terms of the quality they're delivering and the they're willing to push the boundaries very, very hard. I mean, there's stuff that's on the WGN series I never thought in a million years would be on a basic cable network. I mean, they're like on the level of showing reruns of America's Funniest Home Videos.
Mm-hmm.
And then they show this. It doesn't make sense, but there we are. But I will say, probably the story for the past year and going into this season is that year-round scheduling is a lot more prevalent. And we're seeing these basic cable networks putting out original content like they never would have before. I mean, at WGN, Lifetime is putting out shows. And I mean, Lifetime didn't do that well with The Witches of East End, but The Lottery has actually not been bad.
Yep, definitely.
We're just seeing a lot more variety in terms of the networks that are willing to put out or willing to produce this material. So again, I don't know if it's because basically you could carve up all these various cable networks among like five or six different major corporations, but and maybe they're spreading out their material based on the likelihood of return on investment. But regardless, I'm kind of happy that that's happening because we're getting a much broader selection. And this is probably something that should have been happening years ago instead of it all being reality-based low-budget crap.
Yeah.
Well, don't forget too now, distribution is starting to change a little bit more. The internet is letting them get out information and you know, knowledge about these shows that they might not have had exposure to, you know, even 3 or 4 years ago.
That's true, because a lot of these shows that are premiering are within 24 hours, they're out on either their own apps or on Hulu.
Yeah.
So, they're promoting the hell out of the properties. And it's also a good advertising for those cable networks as well, because people might get into a show based on the internet distribution of it and then be surprised to find that it's on this other channel, and that'll kind of draw them to the channel and to the other things that they're doing. So, I mean, it's a fair point. It's all getting mixed together now. And one thing that we don't see on here at all are the shows that are original shows on Hulu or Netflix or, you know, Yahoo or wherever else you want to pick.
Yeah.
There are a lot of these online distributors that have original content as well. And we know Netflix, I mean, we never talked about it here in very much detail, but Orange is the New Black was a huge cultural sensation that was, you know, a Netflix original. And they're where the new Marvel shows are going to be premiering, among others. So Netflix and even Amazon is, you know, these are the outlets where a lot of good genre stuff is going to start coming out of. We have talked about things like House of Cards too. So, I mean, we have talked about it, but it's becoming more and more prevalent as time goes by.
Yeah, and even on Amazon, I mean, it's just in its second year, but this whole thing of Amazon doing its little pilot season and releasing all these pilots is starting to now generate regular buzz when those roll around again. And with that whole concept of people being able to actually watch all of them and then vote on the ones they think are worthy of continuing is certainly an interesting concept. And I'm rather intrigued to see if that continues to fly or not.
Yes, absolutely. All right, well, that's our quick and dirty look at the fall season, because by the time that we get back into things, it may in fact be the fall season starting. So we might as well go ahead and cover it now. But that means we're going to probably do the quick hits next. And Gary, I don't think you are up on any of these shows. So.
No, I'll bow out at this point and start watching some of the shows we talked about.
Sounds like a good idea. All right.
All right, guys, take care.
Okay, you too.
All right. Well, one of the things that we need to do as far as these quick hits are concerned is catch up on Falling Skies,
yes.
A show that has been back and forth between a major topic and a quick hit all season long, kind of straddling the fence here. And there are three episodes here. So, Edmund, if you don't mind.
Certainly. First up is Falling Skies, Season 4, Episode 10, Drawing Straws. Tom and the Second Mass learn to pilot an airship as part of a perilous mission to destroy the Asfeni Power Core. Meanwhile, long-standing issues impact the group as the threat of death hangs over them. God, they're mm-hmm. Yeah, they're really trying to punch up the episode here in that description, I can see. But
Just a little.
Yeah.
What would you give this one?
Yes, well, let's see. Casting my mind back, since I suppose these did air a little while ago. I think I would give this one a 7.
All right, and I am going to go with a 6.
Okay,
this has been fortunately my go to for the season. Just drawing out this whole plot. I mean, it just. This one, I believe, is the one that was really introducing this whole idea that Maggie was being influenced strongly by the implants that Matt donated to save her life.
Yeah.
And it really annoys me, this whole idea that she's powerfully attracted to Matt against her will. and she says practically nothing about it. I mean, given her past history, wouldn't a character who had been abused so many times and used over the years kind of take exception to having her own feelings and emotions be so blatantly manipulated?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't, and also, maybe I'm getting them mixed up, but isn't it Ben who has the spikes?
Ben, I don't know.
Yeah, but I think Matt's the youngest one. But yeah, I know.
I don't care.
Exactly.
That's part of the problem.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes, it's Ben. Thank you. Yes. I was doing the alliteration problem there in my head. But yes, you're right. But that's what kind of annoyed me the most. It's like, you're trying to create a love triangle, but by doing it, you're kind of taking the choice out of the hands of the female character in a really icky way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and not to mention the fact that there seemed to be virtually no blowback from Hal basically going against her wishes to give her the implants in the first place.
Right. Right, exactly. So it's really messed up, to be honest.
Yeah. No, if I'm remembering right, I mean, I think part of the reason why I might have given this one a 7 is because I think this is the one where you did have Tom actually invoking JFK's "Let's get to the moon by the end of the decade" speech, and that speech just has such a powerful effect on me.
Okay, I can understand that then. Yeah, definitely, there was some resonance there, but I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right. I mean, as far as some of the other stuff that was going on, it really was getting more than a little painful.
Yeah, and then we have Space Oddity. That's season 4, episode 11. A mission to destroy the Asfeni power core turns complicated when Lexi returns.
Yes.
Elsewhere, Lexi takes drastic measures when an airship malfunctions and the second mass fears an Asfeni attack.
Yes. Otherwise known as Lexi has finally learned to control the Force, so what should we do with her?
What would you give this one?
I can go back to a 6 on this one.
I give this a 6.5.
Yeah.
It's very rote. Again, we have this thing where Tom and his daughter reconcile her intentions through this kind of mental construct idea. And they're foreshadowing this attack that's going to come to the second mass, but they never actually get there. I really don't understand this whole idea that Lexi announces her arrival as an ally by blowing up things. I don't get it.
Well, it was Asfeni things.
But it was done in such a way to try and make it questionable what was going on, and all it did was be confusing. I don't know. And finally, we've got season 4, episode 12, Shoot the Moon. Tom and Lexi must triumph over Tom's mortal enemy as they desperately try to destroy the all-powerful Asfeni power core. Elsewhere, the second mass faces a terrifying new Asfeni bomb. It's practically identical to the okay.
Yeah.
What would you give this finale?
5.5.
How did I know you were going to say that? I'll give it a 6.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. The season still comes in lower than ever.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So here's what's kind of weird about it. So, okay, they get rid of Lexi, which they had to do.
Yeah.
There was no doubt in my mind they were going to have to kill her off. What's strange, though...
Presumably, yes.
Yes, presumably. What's strange, though, is that they do all of that, and then they introduce this really weird bomb weapon thing.
Yes.
That if they had that in their arsenal, why haven't they used that before?
Yes.
Yeah, it would have made a lot more sense.
Magic concrete fog and all.
Yeah. It really would have made a lot more sense before.
Mm-hmm.
But then they get through this, they destroy the power core, the Asfeni are apparently completely depowered.
Yes.
The situation has completely changed, and the season ends with Tom in a low-rent version of 2001 A Space Odyssey?
Mm-hmm. Apparently.
What?
Well, no. I mean, I think it's in the Falling Skies writer's bible that yes, every season the finale must end with some strange new element that then they can try and figure out how to explain it next season.
Okay. I guess, yeah. I mean, the evidence is right there, but wow. Just all right. So it. My problem with this, of course, is that it just drops this completely new element to things instead of actually pointing to what next season is going to supposedly use as a wrap-up for the series.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever. At this point, I just really don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be watching next season just to see how badly they wrap this up.
Yeah. I mean, precisely, this is one of those things where it's like, you know, okay, no, I've watched all the way through 4. I know 5 is it. So yes, I will grind through just to see where it goes. But
yes. And maybe even just to see if the trend continues to fall. I mean, the show only started as 7.2, so it was never like blowing us out of the park or anything, but now it's down to a 6.3. So, I mean, as catastrophic falls from grace go, this is actually fairly consistent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as bad as, like, True Blood and some of the swings we've had on that show, but, yeah, it, not a show that is aging well.
No.
And it never really found itself. Too much of the whole family thing.
I remember. I mean, right back in the beginning, that was always my biggest problem in the first season was, you know, no, you've got some great sci-fi ideas here, and then it's got to be all the Mason family drama overlaying all that.
All right. Well, I think we have a show that we can move on to that's at least a little bit better, and that would be Legends. And can you take the first one here?
Certainly. This is Legends, season 1, episode 4, Betrayal. Martin is sold VX gas, resulting in the apprehension of the Colonel and Anna Polonis. In response, one of the Colonel's minions releases VX on a crowded bus and promises more attacks if the Colonel and Anna aren't released.
Okay, what would you give this one?
I will give this one an 8.
Okay, I gave it a 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
So a bit above average. Yeah, this actually turns out to be, at least up to this point, the best episode of the show for us.
Yep.
Any general thoughts?
Well, I mean, I did like the way that coming out of the, if I'm remembering right, I think, because I think it was coming out of the previous episode into this one, that whole thing of Martin having to actually demonstrate the VX and to take out that guy was kind of indicating that they were willing to put him in tough situations and then actually having the VX be deployed was the element that I was not necessarily expecting and liked that they were willing to push it that hard. Then even with the whole interplay they'd set up between Anna and the Colonel and Martin and the way they were playing them back and forth with the in the interrogations, I thought was pretty well done. I mean, this is a show where they're it could easily sink into sort of predictable spy covert operations cliches, and so far I've been pleasantly surprised that they're managing to avoid that.
Yeah, definitely, and that kind of leads into the next one, which is season 1, episode 5, Rogue. Martin is put on leave in the wake of a confrontation with the Colonel. Martin then begins to investigate his own past, discovering that an enigmatic smuggler in Houston may have the answers he needs.
Yes.
I really like this one. I gave this one an 8.5.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, this was easily the best episode that they've had because it's all about Martin and his identity crisis, which I thought they were going to just kind of drop for a while. But they actually were steadily leading right to this crisis of identity. And man, this was Sean Bean just getting a chance to chew the hell out of the scenery.
Absolutely.
And just act the shit out of it, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, this was a tour de force performance for him. Just a few cliches here and there that kept it from being higher.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
Even so, it was just fun to watch. I mean, it was just really nice stuff.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I'd say probably, I mean, certainly the cliche that was number one on my list was the oh so unsurprising revelation that his wife is in on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was the part I was thinking of too, yeah. Is that, okay, there's no way that this could be going on this long without her feeding into it in some way, shape or form. She was way too calm about some of the things that were happening. So, if his Martin identity is false, then her pushing as hard as she was at times made a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm.
That she was there to stabilize that identity.
Yes, exactly.
Versus, it definitely put some of the pieces together, but it was like, you kind of saw that coming, and it is a little bit of a stock and trade for this kind of story, but even so, I just like the way that they did it. This was a really strong episode, and I'm hoping that the series continues along these lines, because that would be really fun. It would definitely live up to the promise of all of the promotion of the show to this point.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's see. Moving on then to this one you're going to take.
Absolutely. This is the latest episode of Masters of Sex, Season 2, Episode 9, Story of My Life. Masters bristles at Frank's insinuations about his and Esterbrook's demons. Virginia uses a patient's case history to gain advice from a psychiatrist. Betty and Masters try to remedy Lester's impotence by hiring a prostitute. And Barbara gets an unsettling diagnosis that threatens to expose a chain of secrets. And I will give this a 7.5. After they had hit a bit of a peak with the Styrion a couple of episodes ago, I'm having a little bit of trouble. I mean, it's a matter of, I mean, again, 7.5. So, you know, but for this show, that's dropping it down to closer to average range. The biggest issue I'm having is, and part of the problem here may be that I actually have read some of the Masters of Sex biography that all this is based on, and I'm starting to really get this impression that, the Bill Masters they're presenting in the series is getting a little away from the real person, and I don't think it's necessary. There's this whole this episode was bringing to a head Masters' own impotence and sort of making it more making their study, you know, as much about curing him as it is about investigating sexual mores in general. And it seemed really silly to me to be doing that when, in fact, they already have Lester's character exploring that element of things. And this shift in their research where they were starting to focus more on sexual dysfunction. I really don't see the need to personalize it with the main characters, and there's also just another weird congruence with Mad Men, where as the character of the long lost brother has his story is continuing, but we now have the prostitute that they take Lester to just happens to be this very voluptuous redhead, played actually by the actress who played Spartacus's wife, her whole demeanor and wardrobe, etc., in this seemed like this was basically like their version of Joan from Mad Men coming in to help him with his impotence, but it just seemed a little strange. Not that it was it wasn't very 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 nice to look at, but certainly would have cured mine if I had one.
I can understand.
Yes, so the problem's becoming for me. And I'm glad that I actually have not read all of the biography, because it really is starting to feel to me like, you know, no, this is a case of the TV series is veering off into exploring other issues they want to explore, and kind of getting a little away from the actual realities they're supposedly chronicling.
Yes, yes, indeed. All right, let's see. The next one on the list is The Musketeers, Season 1, Episode 7, A Rebellious Woman.
Yes.
The Musketeers investigate the tragic death of a young girl. The probe leads them into the world of a highborn and enlightened woman who gets under Athos' skin.
Yes, she does.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I'd say so. What would you give this one?
8.5.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I was thinking. This was by far my favorite episode of the season.
Yeah.
So up to this point, at least. I haven't seen beyond it, so I can't say. But, yeah, I was enjoying this tremendously. And I actually wound up watching this with my family, and mm-hmm. they all loved it.
Yeah.
This show has been surprisingly outperforming my expectations. And tackling some of this subject matter of, you know, female rights and the historical. I mean, it's not entirely accurate.
No.
But I like what I do like about it is that if a show is not going to be absolutely 100% historically accurate, that they at least approach things in a way that invokes the same level of societal disparity that would have been reflected in the mores of the time.
Yes.
And I think that's what they struck here. It's not unlike what they did with Black Sails when they had Eleanor in a prominent position. In that time, that never would have happened, but it paints the picture for us in our time.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing here. It was really well done in terms of the tensions between different aspects of society and what. And I just kind of loved that character at the center of it.
Yeah, definitely, and also the you know that Peter Capaldi getting to do a little bit more in the background with introducing as well that whole element of papal interference and him having to make the decision of who is he really going to serve, the Rome or his king, and you know, I thought that whole element was rather well handled. And, of course, meant that the Musketeers had to actually save him.
Yes, of course. I'm happy to have heard that they're finding a way to juggle production schedules so that Capaldi can be both the Doctor and continue on as the Cardinal, because,
yes.
Come on. It's just wonderful to watch. I mean, it is one of the best things about the show.
Yeah.
But that said, I mean, if they had to find a way to get around that or they couldn't find a way around that and they had to just go with the Musketeers, it's just been surprisingly good.
Yes.
On that level as well. It's a really nice adaptation. But anyway, moving on then to a show that we haven't had a chance to weigh in on yet.
No.
And that would be Intruders. Go ahead and take the first one, if you don't mind.
Sure. This is Intruders, Season 1, Episode 1. No, it's not called Pilot. She was provisional. Members of a secret society chase immortality by seeking refuge in the bodies of others. In the opener, the wife of a retired cop vanishes on her way to Seattle on business. As her husband searches for her, he's asked by a friend to help with the murder case. Meanwhile, a 9-year-old girl starts behaving erratically after seeing a stranger on a beach, and an assassin desperately tries to stop his secret from becoming known.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you give this?
Six.
Okay. I would say 5.5.
Okay.
I thought this was a muddled mess.
Oh, completely.
It made no sense to me whatsoever. There's little to no exposition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the thing that gets me about that recap I just read is, no, if it was going to reflect the episode, take away that first sentence, because that first sentence is explaining a bunch of things that you get absolutely no explanation of within the episode.
Well, yeah, that was my other comment, too, is that basically that recap explains so much more about what's going on than these episodes did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's like, no, it should have just that laundry list of all these things that are happening, and yes, we're sitting here watching them going, like, okay, it's only the fact that I'm kind of aware from reading some, reading some of the background material of what you're supposed to be showing me here, except you're not showing it to me in the episode.
Exactly. It's kind of crazy. All right, then moving on to the second one, if you don't mind.
Sure. Season 1, Episode 2, and here, you must listen. Jack searches for Amy in Seattle, but her movements produce more questions than answers. Meanwhile, Madison finds herself in a train station with a ticket to Seattle, an envelope with money, and a mysterious key. and Richard suffers serious consequences due to an act of humanity.
Hmm. And what would you give this?
I will... Okay, well, I was going to stick with my 6. I'll give it a 6.5.
Okay, I'll raise it to at least a 6.
Okay.
Made a little bit more sense. What was funny is that I was watching this episode the day after getting back from Dragon Con, in fact.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And my daughter was still home because she wasn't quite getting starting school yet. And she caught this episode with me. And she kept asking me, what's going on? And I just kind of was like, I have no clue. I don't know. I can't explain it. I'm watching, trying to figure it out. And she's just like, huh? I was like, nope, that's pretty much the reaction one should have after watching this show, mm-hmm. at least these two episodes.
Yeah.
Is what is going on? You get a little bit of the sense of what was in that recap for the first episode by the end of this one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you're really having to read between the lines.
Yeah.
It's like I said at one point, I don't know if I said it on the show or not, but this is Glenn Morgan learning all the worst things from his tenure on the X-Files.
Exactly.
It's like, be obscure for the sake of obscurity. I really don't like that. But at any rate, and wrapping this one up, season 1, episode 3, Time Has Come Today. Jack returns home and discovers a distraught and distant Amy. Meanwhile, Madison becomes determined to get to Seattle regardless of the cost and evade Richard's vengeance. I actually thought that this was a better episode. I would give this a 7. How about you?
I would have to drop this back to a 6 for me.
Okay. I'm maybe giving it a little bit more because Mira Sorvino.
I can understand that, but at the same time, I mean, to me, one of the things about this episode was that, he gets home, she's there, and then it just felt to me like the episode just like thudded to a halt while they're having this interminable fight with each other.
But if nothing else, the fact that they were focusing on just a handful of characters
mm-hmm.
in long stretches made it easier to see what was happening. Because otherwise, it's so hard to tell if somebody is acting with their actual personality versus their kind of intruder personality.
Right.
And it was a lot easier to see the distinctions in this episode, in my opinion anyway, because they weren't constantly jumping back and forth where you kind of had to figure it out in context, but you were never given enough information of what the people were like before they got possessed to be able to say, oh, that's when the only one that it's obvious with is the kid.
Well, yeah.
But obviously that's going to show, but there's a lot of characters that may or may not be, you know, carriers for these immortals or whatever that, I still don't know if they are or they're not because they never showed us what it's like when they're not possessed.
Right.
So anyway,
yeah, that's true.
I like
this
one because of that. At least it was kind of finally doing real storytelling. It may not have been the most compelling because I only gave it an average rating, but at least it was something.
Yep.
Go ahead. You were going to add to that.
Oh, No, it's just when you were mentioning that about this is the one where you were spending more chunks of time with people so you could tell the differences. I mean, I think this is one of the problems is this whole thing of just jumping right into the story right when this is all starting to happen. I think was a mistake because especially given you've got this fabulous cast, you know, it's like no, give us an episode of showing us that baseline of what they were like before this starts happening, so then you can it's as jarring to the audience as it is to the to John Sim and the other people in their lives, rather than just tossing it us in at the deep end and thinking, oh yes, this is all all mysterious and jarring, and yes, we're going to just try and completely throw you off base from the beginning. It's like no, there is something to be said for those conventions of at least show us who these people were before you start messing with them.
Mm, exactly. I think that's really the problem, is that we were thrown in right in the midst of stuff, and so there was no time to establish a baseline.
Yeah.
What this series desperately needs is a flashback episode.
Yes.
Really, it does. It needs some way of establishing something that the audience can grab onto.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's really just a nice show to watch while we're waiting for the fall to start.
Yes, exactly.
All right, that's it then for these quick hits, and that wraps up our week. Any last thoughts, Edmund?
No. Well, after previewing what's to come, I'm looking forward to finally having some content to look at, and especially at the beginning of the week, which has been incredibly sparse recently. That getting reminded that, oh yeah, that's right. Mondays and Tuesdays can be really packed once we get into the fall.
Oh yeah, and yeah, we're still in a bit of drought next time, so it'll be interesting to see what it is exactly we cover, because I think there's only a handful of shows right now.
Yeah.
But we'll worry about that next week.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.